if this kind of urban insurrection becomes more common, they're going to have to learn new tactics.
Militants and Philippines government forces clash. It's Tuesday, June 6th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're also online on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, tough talk on Asia security, preparing to survive large earthquakes, a cloudy future for Asia climate, eating algae and keeping oceans clean. It all comes your way right now on VOA Asia. As the Philippines continues to deal with militant violence on the southern island of Mindanao, efforts to rescue hundreds of residents of the Philippine city of Marawi failed when explosions and gunfire undermined a truce between the military and Islamist rebels. Hundreds of local militants have been bolstered by dozens of foreign fighters who stormed the city May 23rd. Speaking via Skype, Asia Foundation Philippine analyst Stephen Rood says he's not surprised by how long it is taking for Philippine troops to retake Marawi on Mindanao Island.
Part of the trouble is, of course, the very nature of urban warfare. We've seen in Mosul in Iraq, a small determined group can hold off a much larger opposition force, particularly when they're embedded among civilians and the military has to be very careful. The other thing, however, is that the Philippine military hasn't really trained for urban warfare. They train for jungle warfare. And so if this kind of urban insurrection becomes more common, they're going to have to learn new tactics.
Rood says the fighting is attracting combatants, while one group in negotiations with the government is involved on the fringes of the fighting.
There seems to have been a recent influx of a dozen or so. And the second place, militants from all over Mindanao are flocking to Marawi to join in on the fight. The Moro Islamic Liberation Front and the government's military and police have what are called joint peace and security teams who have been training for a while, and they've been deployed for the first time now to help guard the humanitarian corridor that the government and the Moro Islamic Liberation Front set up. But as actual fighting, no. Go-betweens or safe conduct and that sort of thing has been going on, and that's been very encouraging, but actual armed encounters haven't happened in Marawi.
Near the capital, police said the lone suspect in Friday's attack on Resorts World Manila, in which 37 people died, was an indebted gambler, not a terrorist, as claimed by Islamic State. Stephen Rood says it presented a chance for the terror group to try to gain publicity.
One of the clues to the fact that it wasn't a genuine claim is that within a couple of hours, Islamic State contradicted itself. Its first claim claimed that there were several, and then the second one said there was only one. I think what it was that ISIS does have an operative in Marawi City who is communicating with their news agency, and he saw an opportunity to try to take credit for this.
Meanwhile, Philippine lawmakers have petitioned the Supreme Court to review and nullify President Rodrigo Duterte's martial law decree issued following the rebel takeover in Marawi last month. They argue that there was no factual basis for the declaration and warned it resembled the two-decade rule of Ferdinand Marcos, which ended in 1986 during the, quote, People Power Revolution. Our thanks to Victor Beatty for contributing to this story. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. India launches a heavy-lift rocket. Afghan peace conference comes amid rising terror and political tensions. Philippine lawmakers ask top court to nullify martial law. Temporary coal plant halt, just small step in South Korean pollution problem. Japan pushed world leaders to warn China over maritime expansion. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has called on China to pressure neighbor and ally North Korea to abandon its illegal nuclear weapons program. Speaking in Sydney, Australia, Tillerson also took aim at China's ambitions in the South China Sea.
We oppose China's artificial island construction and their militarization of features in international waters. China is a significant economic and trading power, and we desire a productive relationship. But we cannot allow China to use its economic power to buy its way out of other problems, whether it's militarizing islands in the South China Sea or failing to put appropriate pressure on North Korea. They must recognize that with a role as a growing economic and trading power comes security responsibilities as well.
China has expressed its firm opposition to similar remarks made by U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis during the just-concluded Shangri-La Security Summit in Singapore. Australian Defense Minister Maurice Payne also spoke of concerns of Islamic State's links to Southeast Asia and the risk of returning foreign fighters with battlefield skills, hardened ideology, who are, quote, angry and frustrated. University of New South Wales Professor Emeritus Carl Thayer tells VOA's Victor Beatty, Australia considers counterterrorism operations of the highest priority.
I think what's really being hinted at is even more cooperation on the intelligence front to identify these individuals, because there was talk of trying to prevent them from returning to countries. And Australia, Foreign Minister Julie Bishop made it clear that any Australian involved in that was committing a crime and they would be punished. And in fact, if they are dual citizens and an adopted Australian nationality as their second citizenship, they would be stripped of that.
These foreign fighters, they're originally, I assume, from Southeast Asia. Where are they mostly coming from?
They're coming from southern Philippines. They're coming from Australia in several hundred numbers, and then a scattered few from Indonesia, and that's in our particular region, and Malaysia. So I think you have in that order. And the concern really is because of issues that have arisen in domestic politics in the Philippines, where some of the groups have declared their loyalty to the caliphate, and then these outrageous attacks recently that sort of the fans have, these embers have been stoked again. But it's unclear if this is being caused by the foreign fighters returning. That's what's worried, because I think the common assumption is that Islamic State is being defeated and its geographic base narrows. Two things: they're encouraging attacks like in London, but return fighters will come home and provide the expertise and perhaps the leadership for local radicals.
How are countries in Southeast Asia controlling this?
Since the Bali bombings of 2002, there's been a rapid, marked increase in counterterrorism cooperation across the Southeast Asian region on border identification, on modernizing border posts in remote areas to keep track on people that are coming, and the rounding up of terrorists, which is happening in Indonesia. So I think at the moment, this is the potential that's being flashed by security analysts is the next phase of what happens as Islamic State goes into decline.
Meanwhile, Indonesia, Malaysia, and the Philippines are expected to deploy spy planes and drones in addition to maritime patrols to stem the movement of militants across the million-square-kilometer Sulu-Sulawesi region bordering all three countries. It's seen as a response to the jihadist takeover of the Philippine city of Marawi on Mindanao Island. Happening now in Asia, an explosion kills at least one person and injures nine at a petrochemical plant in Shandong Province in China. Seven more people are missing. VOA 60 has the headline stories you need online every day. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us today listening to VOA Asia. Thank you so much. Earthquakes are a fact of life in the Pacific Rim countries, but most of them are small shocks that don't do much damage. But a major quake, one registering more than 6.0 on the open-ended Richter scale, can devastate communities, even those that have prepared for disaster. In many urban centers around the Pacific Rim, it could be weeks or a month or even more before water service gets restored after a major earthquake, not to mention electricity, sewage, and fuel supplies, too. Correspondent Tom Bonsi reports on the cost-benefit choices that leaders are making on both sides of the Pacific.
Japan has a deserved reputation as one of the best-prepared countries in the world for earthquakes. But even there, quakes can cause massive and lasting damage. You may recall a big earthquake struck Kobe, Japan, in 1995.
It's also hard to fathom why, here in one of the most developed parts of the world, firemen are slowed down because the water supply has been cut off.
The magnitude 6.9 quake knocked out water and electricity, collapsed a main highway and railway, and killed more than 6,000 people. Kobe is now in the process of replacing nearly 4,800 kilometers of cast iron water distribution lines with flexible pipe to make its system earthquake resistant. Hitoshi Araike is an assistant manager at the city's Waterworks Bureau.
I guess that the damage we have received in the earthquake kind of determined that we will replace the pipes.
Araike and an interpreter led foreign journalists deep underground to see a new large transmission main that can double as emergency water storage. It cost more than $300 million. He described automatic shutoff valves installed at reservoirs to keep water from draining away after a quake. And he showed the flexible pipes and new-style connectors with reinforced sleeves that resist breakage. They're being deployed at both the waterworks and a rebuilt sewage treatment plant. I asked Araike how long water service might be out in his city after the next great earthquake.
Once the new technology is in place, I expect zero disruption.
Zero disruption.
Other Pacific Rim countries with memories of great earthquakes are investing in seismic strengthening, notably Chile, Taiwan, China, and New Zealand. However, it takes a long time and a lot of money to make a difference at the city or regional level. Lack of resources or lack of building code enforcement can be a barrier in less developed countries, such as Pakistan or Cambodia. A big public utility on the U.S. West Coast also has an ambitious earthquake resilience goal.
We'd like to get back up and operating within 3 to 4 days. That's our goal from a level of service standpoint.
Jim Miller is the engineering superintendent for Everett, Washington's Public Works Department. I spoke with him as contractors were reinforcing walls and ceilings to earthquake-proof the operations building at the city's drinking water treatment plant. It serves 600,000 people north of Seattle. Miller says his utility assessed its earthquake vulnerability and has prioritized a list of seismic upgrades that could take 20 years and many millions of dollars to complete. City residents would have to cover that cost with higher water bills.
If we did nothing, that's more, you know, business as usual. And so you could keep rates lower. But people we've found, for the most part, expect a reliable system. And once they understand what it's for, they seem, in fact, our wholesale customers have actually encouraged us to make our system more resilient.
A regional water supply group for the greater Seattle area recently estimated outage times for a big offshore earthquake and close-by shallow ones. Their analysis found it currently could take up to 60 days to restore service to most customers. Those projections for long outages of vital services mean residents need to prepare to survive on their own. State and federal emergency managers used to recommend stockpiling food and water and medicines for 3 days. Now, Oregon and Washington state suggest people in earthquake country prepare a kit with 2 weeks' worth of disaster supplies. For VOA News, I'm Tom Bonsi in Everett, Washington.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Islamic State-affiliated Amak News Agency releases video purporting to show men destroying a Catholic church in the southern Philippine city of Marawi. The city has been under siege for over a week and remains under martial law. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Southeast Asia faces far-reaching challenges in ensuring regional cooperation in dealing with climate change after the decision by the United States to withdraw from the 2015 Paris Agreement. The move announced last week by President Donald Trump is seen as a further step away from a higher-profile U.S. role in the region after Washington backed away from the 12-nation Trans-Pacific Partnership Regional Trade Pact earlier this year. President Trump said the 195-nation climate change accord imposed unfair environmental standards on American businesses and workers. But analysts like Titanen Pandasudaharak, a political scientist at Chulalongkorn University, disagree, saying the U.S. decision to withdraw from the Paris Agreement could weaken regional cooperation in dealing with climate change.
This is has a disastrous ramifications because this means that the international framework and agreement to contain environmental damage, global warming, and overall climate change is now undermined and is uncertain what will happen in the future.
Carl Thayer, a defense analyst at the University of New South Wales in Australia, said the threat of rising sea levels places several regions and cities in Asia under threat of inundation, undermining the region's economic progress.
We'll take countries that are weak and make it even weaker and contribute to their becoming a failed state because they cannot cope. And the big issue is then, what do people do? Do they fight or take flight? So we could be seeing massive migrations of people affected, a new wave of Vietnamese boat people.
Analysts such as respected Thai meteorologist Smith Dharmasaroja fear the U.S. absence from the Paris Accord would lead to less of a U.S. commitment, including technical support on climate change.
He's pulled out from that that agreement with the U.N. It's not a good idea because we are in the property in other region that affect from the global warming. See, without security, without the help of United States of America, the global warming in Asia and other countries, this side of the world, will affect a lot because we looking for the worst flood, the worst storm.
He said most small countries look to the United States for its technical expertise and knowledge in climate and environmental issues, with China unable to fill the void. Our thanks to Ron Corbin in Bangkok for sending us this story. Developing at this hour in Asia, India's heaviest newly developed rocket hurtled into space from eastern India, carrying a communications satellite of more than 3 tons. It marks another milestone in the country's ambitious space program and brings India a step closer to sending astronauts into space. You'll find the latest stories on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, fighting hunger around the globe is uniquely challenging. It's not just getting the food to those who need it. It includes growing, or in the case of protein, raising the food that will feed the hungry. VOA's Kevin Enix reports a group of California researchers may have an answer to the protein problem.
An estimated 790 million people around the world are chronically undernourished. Most of these people live in developing countries. That creates a logistical challenge of getting food to those who need it most. Aside from that, algae geneticist Stephen Mayfield says there's a deeper problem.
The world, in fact, is not short of calories. What they're short of is proteins and essential fatty acids.
And both can be found in abundance in algae.
So algae are naturally very high in proteins and in lipids, and those are sort of the two things that the world really needs.
So Mayfield and his team have micro-engineered a protein-rich algae that can be dried out and used as a nutritious food supplement.
Here's one that we've just finished up. And so what we do is we simply take this and dried it out. And as you can see, it makes a very nice green powder, and that is perfectly edible. In fact, it tastes pretty good.
Mayfield's big idea is that algae could one day replace the huge amounts of land taken up by farmers who produce protein in beef or soybeans.
I'm actually really encouraged by these new companies that have started up to make these synthetic plant-based protein substitutes that look just like meat, right? Because now, oh, that looks like something I'm familiar with. I want to eat that. But if I could make that with algae protein instead of with beef protein, an enormous environmental benefit. And probably an enormous cost benefit as well.
Mayfield's work was funded by the U.S. government, and the team just successfully finished a field trial where their algae was successfully grown outdoors. There's no marketable product yet, but Mayfield hopes algae may be one way to help feed the world's chronically hungry. Kevin Enix, VOA News, Washington.
Speaking of protein, more than a billion people around the world rely on food from the ocean as their primary source of protein. But their health and the health of the planet's oceans are threatened by increasing pollution, which impacts all kinds of marine life. VOA United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir reports this week more than 4,000 government, scientific, business, and civil society leaders are meeting in New York to mobilize for action to stop the decline of our oceans.
Pollution, plastics, overfishing. The world's oceans are getting increasingly unhealthy, and man has a lot to do with it.
The ocean is indeed trouble. It's not stuff that's been occurring naturally. All of these problems are created anthropogenically, and so it's for us to find the solutions to them.
Climate change is also making the oceans sick. As the planet warms, more carbon dioxide is emitted into the atmosphere, and the ocean absorbs it. This turns its waters more acidic, harming marine life, especially shellfish and coral reefs. Add in weather trends such as El Niño, and some marine life migrate elsewhere, taking the livelihoods of fishermen with them. Two-thirds of the global tuna catch comes from the Pacific Islands. But in 2016, the fish followed warmer currents eastward, away from their traditional fishing grounds near Palau and Papua New Guinea. This also made the tuna vulnerable to illegal fishing and cost the islands more than $600 million in lost revenue.
The more tuna that end up on the high seas, the more they are subject to illegal, unregulated, unreported fishing, a major threat to the sustainability of tuna fisheries and our economies.
Another threat to the oceans, plastic. Bottles, bags, containers, and even microscopic particles from polyester clothing and other products are dangerous as fish ingest them and then wind up on our dinner plates. Countries relying on beach tourism now realize that healthy oceans make for healthy economies. Indonesia is the world's second biggest ocean polluter after China, according to the Ocean Conservancy.
So the Indonesian government now is instituting laws which are going to stop plastic getting into it because, it's going to affect jobs on the land in the hotel industry if beaches are just full of plastic and the sea's full of plastic.
Healthy oceans directly contribute to poverty eradication, food security, health, clean water, renewable energy, sustainable livelihoods and decent work, economic growth, and climate regulation, just name a few.
Organizers at the UN's Ocean Conference expect a united call for action and a variety of voluntary national commitments to make the ocean healthy again. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
You've been listening to VOA Asia, and we'd like to say hello to all of our friends in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, who are listening via Helps Radio at Help University. Also, the Faculty of Communication who run the radio station. You're very important. Thank you so much for being with us today. You can also download our program from iTunes or SoundCloud if you like, and we'd love to hear from you. Write to us on VOA Asia Facebook or send us an email at voaasia@voanews.com. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Daryl Smith, managing editor, Diane Gao, and David Byrd and Ali Ogden of our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have a great day.